In the early 2010s, there were a series of deadly industrial accidents that killed workers at factories in developing countries.
Two industrial fires in Pakistan claimed the lives of more than 280 people overnight. 258 of them died at a garment factory in Karachi. Firefighters there said many of the victims could not escape because there were no emergency exits or basic safety equipment. The plant had only one accessible exit, and all the other doors were locked.
After Pakistan came the collapse of the Rana Plaza building in Bangladesh.
Over 1,000 people died when an illegally extended 8-story building, which was a garment factory, collapsed in an instant. They made clothes mainly for Western fashion brands.
These tragedies revealed a huge problem. Big multinational companies, these Western brands, were contracting out production to suppliers at these factories where workers were being killed.
And at that point, how multinationals were treating workers at the suppliers came to the spotlight.
That is Jose Vasquez, a Costa Rican economist. I first met Jose at a trade nerd conference we were both attending in Boston. I was late, and he kindly offered to let me share his taxi to the airport. Jose told me about his research into workers and these multinationals.
As the final consumer, I started thinking maybe that they don't want to be associated with some brands that were associated themselves with the building that collapsed. And people started questioning themselves, do we really want to have cheap products at the expense of how workers in developing countries are treated?
Facing pushback from American and European consumers, Jose described to me how dozens and dozens of multinational companies all around the world suddenly began to adopt policies of something called responsible sourcing. Responsible sourcing was the code of conduct that multinationals began to demand of their suppliers in poor countries. The multinationals promised that responsible sourcing would result in the better treatment of workers. Trust us, the multinationals told their consumers. But did these responsible sourcing policies work at making lives better for workers? Or was this just a slick public relations move by some media-savvy global corporations? And even if responsible sourcing helped some workers, were there unintended consequences hurting other workers in those same developing countries? This episode examines these responsible sourcing policies. To do so, I will be joined by Jose Vasquez. Jose is a trade economist and a professor at the London School of Economics. Jose is going to tell us about an incredible new study in which his research team examines the impact of responsible sourcing on workers, on suppliers, and on multinationals in one particularly interesting country, Costa Rica. Hi, Jose.
Hi, Chad.
You are listening to an episode of Trade Talks, a podcast about the economics of trade and policy. I'm your host, Chad Bown, the Reginald Jones Senior Fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. Jose, let's jump right into it. What do consumers, especially consumers in the United States and Europe, what do they really know about the products they buy?
So nowadays, we consume things that, thanks to global value chains, we see the final product. But we have no idea where the parts come from or where the inputs to produce that good come from. We could have a t-shirt, we could have a chair, we could have any product that you have in mind, and most likely has several parts with several different parts of the world. And consumers in general, we have no idea how these parts were made and who made them and how much the workers making these parts were paid or in which conditions these workers worked.
So consumers don't know much about how the things that they buy were being made. How have the multinational companies historically thought about these issues? The Western brands that have these supply chains all over the world, were they concerned with making sure workers in their supply chains weren't being mistreated?
So multinational firms, what they want to do as any firm in the economy is to generate profits, to be profitable. So of course they have incentives to go and produce, usually in developing countries where wages are cheaper, where maybe labor standards are weakly enforced. So for instance, if you go to a country that perhaps even has a good labor law, but it has weak enforcement, so they don't have enough labor inspectors. So you can maybe pay less than the minimum wage, and who would know? And maybe you can force workers to work extra hours without extra pay, and who would know? Maybe you don't allow them to unionize. Maybe you don't care about sexual harassment at the workplace. Maybe you don't care about gender representation.
Before the Rana Plaza incident in 2013 and those other tragedies in which unsafe working conditions killed hundreds of workers, why weren't multinationals paying closer attention to how workers at their suppliers were being treated?
Why? Because they might think this is not a problem. We treat our workers at the multinational nicely. If workers at the supplier are not treated nicely, then it's the problem of the supplier, but it's not the problem of the multinational. However, after the Rana Plaza incident and all this press they generated, consumers in the Western side of the world started realizing that this was not enough of an answer, and that they just wanted someone to make sure, at least to make an effort, to treat workers in developing countries nicer, even outside of the boundaries of the multinational firm.
This potential outrage from Western consumers led a wave of multinationals in the early and mid-2010s to roll out something called responsible sourcing policies. That is the topic of your research. What was in these new codes of conduct that multinationals were demanding from their suppliers? How does it work?
The way it works is almost like a contract. And in these contracts, the multinationals will write whatever they're requiring. For instance, they could say, we will pay beyond minimum wage to workers. We will have X amount of days of vacation. We will have a longer maternity leave than the law states. And this is a contract that at the end of the day is a voluntary contract. So there's no obligation from the multinational to implement it. There's no breaking the law if they don't do it.
The responsible sourcing policy is a voluntary contract between the multinational and its suppliers, but it's not written into any country's laws. So how is it enforced? Is there some sort of external auditing to make sure multinationals and suppliers live up to these promises?
There are some instances, like the Rana Plaza event, in which this attracted so much anger from the public that there were some committees formed and there were some like NGOs heavily involved requiring multinationals to actually have some third-party verification and third-party auditing to make sure they were following on their promises. But in most other instances, multinationals are the ones claiming, at least, that they will do the auditing of their own policies. They visit plants at their suppliers most of the time to do quality checks, but now they will start doing checks related to what they ask in the responsible sourcing policy or responsible sourcing suppliers code of conduct, as they call it.
Multinationals announce these responsible sourcing policies designed to improve worker well-being in developing countries. This sounds great. So what's the problem?
There could be at least two problems. The first one is, would multinationals follow through? Maybe not. We could be skeptical, thinking maybe this is just hot air and this is just an announcement that they make. They think it's good press for them. But at the end of the day, there is no incentive to implement it. And second, even if they do, there could still be some unintended consequences. And so it's more complicated than it looks at the beginning. And that's the reason why we wanted to look at it in more detail.
Jose's research is going to tackle two big questions. First, did the multinationals live up to the promises made when they rolled out these responsible sourcing policies? Second, were there unintended consequences of those policies that we need to worry about? Might responsible sourcing have inadvertently hurt consumers, suppliers, and even other workers in different supply chains in these developing countries? But this responsible sourcing question is so new, at least for researchers, I wanted to spend a couple of minutes to really ask Jose to help us understand the potential unintended consequences we need to be watching out for. And as a warning, put your thinking cap on. This project is amazing, but there is a lot to keep track of. Jose, help us identify what we should be looking out for. Let's start with workers. Can you walk us through the potential impacts of a multinational company rolling out a responsible sourcing policy and all the different kinds of workers out there?
Since these policies are all about working conditions, what we would expect if this, that if they actually do something, you might see an improvement in wages or other benefits at workers that work at the suppliers of the multinationals. Of course, not all workers in the economy work for suppliers of multinationals. So there are all sorts of workers working for other firms that have nothing to do with responsible sourcing policy. However, these workers could be affected indirectly. Let's say low-skilled workers might become relatively more expensive for firms, and firms might switch to other types of workers. Suppliers might say, let me just switch and hire more higher-skilled workers or robots. And this will create a decrease in the demand for workers that are lower skill, which might eventually hurt their employment prospects.
This is so important, I wanted to step in with a little example to make sure we really get the idea. Suppose there are 10 lower skilled workers in the economy. Four of them initially work for the supplier to the multinational, and the other six work for some other guy who does not supply to the multinational. This other guy will not face the responsible sourcing policy. When the multinational rolls out the policy, the lower skilled workers for the supplier to the multinational become more expensive. That is the purpose of the policy. They need to be paid a higher wage. The supplier might say, at that higher wage, I can now only afford to hire two of these workers, not four like before. Maybe I'll buy a robot or hire more of other highly skilled workers whose wage has not gone up. But I'm not going to hire four lower skilled workers anymore, only two. So that now means two original workers now leave to go and work for the other guy. With a lot more workers available to the other guy, there used to be six, now there are eight, wages for those other workers might fall. Jose, another implication of these responsible sourcing policies is that a supplier who signs up has to promise to treat all of its lower skilled workers better, even those who only make things that the supplier sells to the domestic market and not to the multinational. Why does this matter?
Well, domestic consumers consume those goods that now are more expensive, which means that as long as those producers also sell to the domestic market, then there's an increase in the living cost for those workers as well. Directly, you could have workers that benefit from the policy and their wages could go up and the benefits could increase. Indirectly, there could be also increases in the cost of living.
The responsible sourcing policy is costly to the supplier. That means prices for what the supplier also sells in the domestic market will go up. And the problem is that workers, the ones the responsible sourcing policy are trying to help, those workers are also consumers. They do benefit from higher wages, but they also suffer from higher prices. To figure out which effect is bigger, we need to keep track of two things. First, we need to track wages to the different types of workers, those exposed to responsible sourcing who are expected to benefit, and those who work for the other guy and who might get hurt. Second, we also need to track price changes, because even when wages go up, if prices go up by more, workers could still be hurt. Let's turn next to the potential impact of the multinational's responsible sourcing policy on suppliers themselves.
The suppliers need to pay the new standards for the working conditions from somewhere. So let's assume for a second that the multinational holds all the bargaining power in the relationship with the supplier. So in that case, the multinational says, if you want to sell to me in the future, now you need to satisfy certain requirements, A, B, C. But then you're on your own figuring out how you pay for it. If that's the case, then we will see also suppliers losing their profitability because now they incur higher costs because of the worker benefits, higher wages, etc. But they don't see any improvement in the relationship with the multinationals. Of course, the real world is more complicated than that. And it could also be that the multinational commits to pay part of these costs, or maybe in the lucky scenario, the multinational commits to pay all of these costs.
How the suppliers will be impacted depends on how much of the cost of those higher worker benefits the supplier can pass on to the multinational. If the supplier has a lot of bargaining power against the multinational, it can pass along a lot of the costs and its profitability won't be hurt. But if the supplier is just a little guy and the big giant multinational holds all the bargaining power, the supplier might suffer lower profits by not being able to pass along to the multinational the cost of the better benefits to the worker. Jose, this is amazing. But just to remind everyone, so far, this is only theory. Some things could go up, some things could go down, some workers could be helped, other workers could be hurt. The answer of which effect is bigger is why we ultimately need to go and look at the data happening out there in the real world. And we'll get to that in a minute. But before we do, are there any other last potentially good things we should also be on the lookout for when the multinational rolls out its responsible sourcing policy?
The last two things, we could have an intuition that multinationals would conduct audits and they would start visiting suppliers. And then as part of these visits, they do not only discuss about responsible sourcing, but actually about better managerial practices. So if that was the case, then the responsible sourcing policies are also improving the well-being of the domestic economy through helping suppliers becoming more productive. And last, it could also be that the fact that the multinational is having this responsible sourcing policy increases the demand from Western consumers from the multinational good, which means that the multinational might want to expand and might want to just hire more workers and buy more locally. This increase in demand will also benefit the domestic economy.
We have described a lot of moving pieces, but your work provides a framework to tell researchers where to look to ultimately figure out how a multinational's responsible sourcing policy is going to impact various people in a country. It can also help policymakers evaluate whether responsible sourcing might be good or bad for the country as a whole. Before we move on, how would you summarize the key parts of this framework?
The part that is not 100% intuitive is that you might think, okay, just go and look at wages. If wages go up, then it's good for the country. If the wages don't go up, then it's not good. But the answer is complicated because it depends who pays these extra wages. The first element that is important to know whether this will increase the well-being of the country is what is the bargaining power between the multinational and the domestic suppliers. As long as the domestic suppliers have some bargaining power in that relationship and they can shift part of the cost to the multinational, then we'll be good because they will just pass through this cost directly to foreign consumers, bringing resources from outside of the world to the country. The second thing that you have to keep into account is how much of the production of the suppliers that are part of the responsible supply chain is sold in the domestic market. If you have, in the extreme case, that suppliers sell 1% to the multinational and they sell 99% to the domestic market, if they increase the cost of production for that 1%, but this additional cost of production might lead to higher prices to the other 99% of the production that is consumed locally. And that's bad for the country's economic well-being.
One impressive part of your research is that it provides a framework that can really be applied to any country. It's a toolkit that can help us identify the impact of responsible sourcing in any setting. But another thing you do is to provide an actual example where you show how to use this toolkit and what we can learn from it. In your study, what country do you examine and why?
Costa Rica, the most beautiful country in the world. I'm saying this because I am Costa Rican. So Costa Rica is a middle-income country that has seen an increased presence of multinational corporations in the last decade. Not only the multinationals themselves, but also the suppliers, the Costa Rican firms that sell to those multinationals. Just to give you an example, by the end of our sample, around 40% of the private domestic production in the economy was either done by multinationals or by suppliers of multinationals, which makes the rollout of the responsible sourcing policies potentially important for the country as a whole.
So 40% of Costa Rican production being tied to multinationals and their suppliers means there's a strong chance the country will be impacted by these responsible sourcing policies. Let me play devil's advocate. Costa Rica probably isn't the first country most people would think of when it comes to the reasons behind responsible sourcing policies in the first place and the problems that arose at factories in places like Bangladesh with Rana Plaza or Pakistan.
The choice of Costa Rica as a country to study has some trade-offs. On the one hand, it's not the obvious example of violation in labor laws or things that you would expect in other contexts that are poorer. However, in the case of Costa Rica, even if labor laws are very good, the implementation of labor laws and the compliance with labor laws is very bad. Just to give you an example, around 1/3 of the workers are paid less than the minimum wage. And also, if you think about the number of labor inspectors per worker, Costa Rica is doing poorly with respect to peer countries, let alone with respect to OECD countries.
Are there other reasons why Costa Rica is an especially good country to study the impact of responsible sourcing?
Another thing to mention about the Costa Rican case is that here there's not such a Rana Plaza event. There's no tragedy that triggers certain policies in Costa Rica. What we will take advantage of is the fact that these responsible sourcing policies are rolled out globally. So the multinational headquarters would say, starting tomorrow, all our suppliers around the world would satisfied with A and B. And they're not doing this because they think of Costa Rica particularly. Costa Rica is a small economy. It is true that it has increased the employment share of multinationals in the economy, but it's not big enough to say that multinationals will start doing these policies because of Costa Rica. But most importantly, because of the amazing data that it has, that it allows us to track and to follow workers over time, firms, who sells to whom, who buys from whom, which are the multinationals.
What types of multinationals, as well as their affiliates and suppliers, are important for the Costa Rican economy?
You shouldn't expect that Costa Rica will only host agricultural multinationals, such as Dole, producing and selling bananas or pineapples. Actually, there are many sophisticated multinationals, and many of them in the Fortune 500 list operate or have affiliates in Costa Rica. Some examples of them are Intel, the one producing microchips, that opened many years ago a $300 million plant producing microchips in Costa Rica. Other examples are firms in medical devices like Baxter, Boston Scientific, but we also have other types of firms like Walmart or other agricultural firms as well.
Earlier, we worked through your framework and toolkit describing all the different ways that responsible sourcing could impact workers, firms, and consumers, including those potential unintended consequences we need to watch out for. Before we get to your results, one last time, can you walk us through how you are going to apply this framework to suppliers in a country like Costa Rica?
Suppose that you have two identical suppliers in Costa Rica. Suppose that one of them supplies to Coca-Cola and the other one supplies to Pepsi. I'm just making up names just for the sake of the example. Now, suppose that at some point in our sample, the headquarters of Coca-Cola rolls out a responsible sourcing policy, whereas the headquarters of Pepsi doesn't. And then the question in the data is, what happens to those suppliers, the ones selling to Coca-Cola and the ones selling to Pepsi, which are otherwise identical other than one was supplying to a multinational rolling out a responsible sourcing policy and the other one wasn't? What happens to the firm and what happens to the workers of the firm?
What do you look at and what do you find?
The first thing we look at is what happens to workers. In particular, we look at what happens to the wages of workers at pre-existing suppliers of the multinationals rolling out the responsible sourcing policy. What we find is that wages go up. And in particular, wages go up for low-wage workers. And this is good news because this is what the point of the policy actually was. There are also improvements in other types of benefits. For instance, the maternity leave period for workers who are part of the responsible supply chain also increases, which is also good news because this is already an indication that the policy is doing something. It has a bite on the ground. And there is not a lot of action happening for high-wage workers. So the managers of those suppliers, they basically remain with the same wage, whereas the low-wage workers that were close to the minimum wage are the ones experiencing the biggest wage increases.
Did these results surprise you?
What surprised me about our results was that we had this intuition that the responsible sourcing rollouts would be just hot air. We were having in mind multinationals come up and say all these things that they want to implement. We will go to the data, we'll find nothing moves, nothing happens. That was kind of like the prior we had when we started this study. We thought it was like a very interesting idea that we had the right data environment to test it. And it will be a much easier project to do because we would not find anything. And we would just say the message of the paper would be, yeah, this is just hot air. We shouldn't pay too much attention to these public relations statements. And actually the difficulty was when the results were pointing in somewhere in some other direction that initially confused us, but actually made us think harder about the problem more generally.
You found these surprising results, that it was not just hot air, and that suppliers of these multinationals in Costa Rica were actually paying higher wages to the lowest wage workers when the responsible sourcing policy was implemented. But what about those unintended consequences? Was it all good news?
Not everything is good news here. We also see that suppliers start hiring less low-skill workers and hire relatively more high-skill workers because the policy is making low-skill workers more expensive. In addition, we also see that sales and employment of the suppliers go down in general. Some of it is because those suppliers that are exposed might say thank you, but no thank you, and they might just drop the relationship with the multinational. These are big clients for those firms, and then some losses in employment come from that. Some other losses in employment would come, particularly for low-skill workers, just because they become relatively more expensive. So firms just hire less in general. So we might see that some good stuff is happening for certain workers, but then some other workers are being hurt.
What you've described so far is, I think, the average effect on workers. When you look more closely, did you get a clear sense of where these responsible sourcing results were coming from?
The results tend to be stronger once we look at the responsible sourcing rollout by multinationals with headquarters in the US and Western Europe. The reason why this happens in general are twofold. First, this might be the multinationals that care the most about the responsible sourcing policy, simply because their consumers might be the ones putting more pressure to the firms to implement them. Second, these multinationals usually tend to have higher management scores, so they are better managed firms overall, which makes it likely that they have the managerial capacity to implement these policies and make sure that their suppliers comply with them. Once we go deeper into the data, we are also realizing that the effects of wages and employment are mostly driven by suppliers which are small suppliers and in services sectors. This is intuitive because usually those firms are the ones hiring a higher share of initially low-wage workers, which are the ones affected by the policy directly.
Next, I want to turn to the suppliers. What was the impact of the responsible sourcing on the supplier sales? What did you learn from this to help us understand their relationship and bargaining power with respect to the multinationals?
So we saw that wages increase for workers at the suppliers. So this is good news. But there are also some bad news to the suppliers themselves. We see that for them, implementing these policies turns out to be costly. In the end, if they have to improve the benefits or work of their workers, then the payment of that has to come from somewhere. We look at what happened to the suppliers in two ways. First, we have the data to observe what part of their sales go to domestic buyers and what part of their sales go to multinational buyers. Overall, we see that suppliers that are exposed to the responsible sourcing policy see the sales to their domestic buyers also decrease, which is likely meaning that because of the higher cost of production, now they have to charge a higher price, and therefore the demand for their good in the domestic market would go down. We also look at what happens in the relationship with the multinational themselves. You would expect that if the multinational bears all the cost of the policy, then nothing will happen in terms of how much they buy from the supplier, and it would be just a transfer from the multinational to the supplier. However, what we see in the data is that sales to the multinational also go down. It means that there's no full pass-through of the cost. So the supplier, to remain profitable, they have to increase the price. And because they increase the price, then the multinational just buys less from them.
Why won't the supplier be able to pass through all of the costs to the multinational? And why is this pass-through issue so important?
Because multinationals tend to be large buyers and domestic suppliers are small suppliers. There is an asymmetry in their relationship in terms of importance from each other that would tell us that it's likely that the multinational holds more of the bargaining power in that relationship. And this is bad because the more bargaining power the multinational holds in the relationship, the more of the cost is going to be eaten up by the domestic economy, which will lower the potential gains from the responsible sourcing policy. In the world in which the supplier could pass through all the costs to the multinational, that is the best scenario for the domestic economy.
For the case of Costa Rica, what did you learn about the effect of responsible sourcing on the multinationals themselves?
We cannot say anything about profits because this is not what we observe. But what we can say is that at least in terms of sales, we don't see an increase in sales for those multinationals that roll out the responsible sourcing policy relative to other similar multinationals that do not roll out the responsible sourcing policy. Additionally, we don't see a big increase in the sales of multinationals themselves once they roll out these policies, which was a possibility, given that you could think that foreign consumers might value these policies a lot, and this might create a demand shift to the domestic economy because the multinational might want to expand and hire more workers locally, buying more inputs locally, which would have been beneficial for the domestic economy, but we just simply don't find that evidence in the Costa Rican case.
Unfortunately, there was little evidence that Western consumers were so happy about responsible sourcing that they were willing to pay for it by increasing demand or shifting their demand toward the brands that were rolling it out. That's a bummer. Earlier, you described another potential benefit involving productivity gains for the local supplier in Costa Rica. Did you find any evidence of that?
In the case of Costa Rica, we don't find that the rollout of the responsible sourcing policies is associated with increases in productivities of the suppliers of multinationals. There is a potential they could meet, and they could talk not only about responsible sourcing, but also about managerial practices, and this could potentially increase the productivity of suppliers, but we don't see evidence of that.
Now, since these responsible sourcing policies are being rolled out globally, we might worry that multinationals would just pull out of Costa Rica and other developing countries altogether. Maybe multinationals would try to avoid the headache of sourcing from developing countries and switch to only buying inputs from richer supplying countries where the responsible sourcing policies were already being met. Did you see any evidence of that concern?
So we test this hypothesis in the case of Costa Rica, but looking at what is the share of the overall multinational production that happens in the country. And we see no evidence that the multinational is reallocating production away from Costa Rica because of the policy.
That is some good news then. With all of the moving pieces you identified, the last thing your framework allows you to do is to add it all up. When you aggregate all of these pieces together, was the multinational's responsible sourcing policies good or bad for Costa Rica as a whole?
Overall, we find that the policy has just a small positive effect for the country as a whole. However, this result masks a lot of distributional effects across workers in the country. We find strong positive effects for those low-skilled workers who are exposed to the policy, and at the same time, negative effects for those workers who are not exposed to the policy. Even if the strong positive effects of the first group are higher than the negative effects for the second group, the second group constitutes a majority of the workers in the economy. So once we take into account, there is a relatively smaller group that is benefiting a lot versus a much larger group that is hurt a little bit. And we will, when we put the two parts together, we would say that there's a small positive effect for the economy as a whole.
Jose, you and your team have developed this incredible framework and used that framework to provide an extremely detailed case study of Costa Rica. But Costa Rica is just one country. Are there warnings for how we should interpret your results?
First, in theory, the effects of the policy are ambiguous, so everything can go. The fact that in Costa Rica we find a small positive effect doesn't mean that we don't find the same effect in some other country like Ecuador. So that's why we need to connect the framework with the data. Second, Costa Rica is a middle-income country, so the types of policies that might have a bite in Costa Rica are very different from the type of policies that might be relevant in other less developed economies. For instance, you could think of banning child labor as part of the responsible sourcing requirements. This is a policy that, fortunately, in the case of Costa Rica, doesn't have a bite because child labor is minimal. But the effects that this could have in a different context where child labor is more important might be relevant and in ways that we haven't covered in our study.
As my last question, I wanted to ask for your policy advice. Suppose the Minister of Economy for Bangladesh or Ecuador wants help for their country. They see your results for Costa Rica, but they know their economy is different. They're worried about the potential impact of these multinational responsible sourcing policies on their economy. Is responsible sourcing likely to be good or bad for them? What does your approach tell them to look out for?
It's likely to be good the less bargaining power multinationals have with their suppliers. It's likely to be good the less production of suppliers affected is sold to the domestic market. It's likely to be good if there are productivity increases at domestic suppliers that come from this interaction with multinationals. And it's likely to be good if the multinational itself receives a demand increase from Western consumers because now they treat workers nicely. Conversely, it's likely to be bad if multinationals hold a lot of bargaining power because the cost of the policy is likely to be paid by domestic suppliers. And it's likely to be bad if a lot of the production of domestic suppliers is sold to the domestic market, because the increase in the cost of the policy will be translated into an increase in the prices for the domestic consumers. And whether it's good or it's bad, it's likely to be exacerbated by what is the share of the economy's production that is part of their responsible supply chain. Of course, if multinationals account for a small share of the economy, then even if you have a responsible sourcing policy, is going to affect such a small share of the workforce that it's likely that the indirect effects on other workers are going to be very small. At the same time, if the share of multinational employment is very large in the economy, then whatever effects you see from the responsible sourcing policy, whether they are positive or negative, are going to be magnified by the relative importance of suppliers of multinationals in the overall economy.
Jose, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And that is all for Trade Talks. A huge thanks to Jose Vasquez at the London School of Economics. Do check out Jose's amazing paper titled Responsible Sourcing, Theory and Evidence from Costa Rica. It is joint work with Isabella Manalici, Cecile Gobert, Ben Faber, and Alonso Alfaro Urania. I will post a link to the paper on the episode page of the Trade Talks website. Thanks to Melina Kalb, our supervising producer. Thanks to Sarah Tu on digital. And as always, thanks to Colin Warren, our audio guy. Do follow us on Twitter or Mastodon. We're on @trade_talks. That's not one but two underscores, @trade_talks. Because when it comes to the number of trade economists in a Boston taxi talking about workers and multinationals, two is better than one.